Three, two, one. A common concern for many people at some point in their lives is the inability to sleep. Indeed, this is a common problem in our society with many remedies, medications, and therapies pretending to provide the solution to our sleep disorders. What does the evidence say regarding the best approach to help those that have been having problems falling or staying asleep? A Canadian study, published in the May 20th edition of the Journal of the American Medical Association, found that the short-term addition of a particular sleep medication coupled with cognitive behavioral therapy helped more people overcome persistent insomnia. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Charles Marin, professor of psychology and director of the Sleep Research Center at the Université Laval, and holds a Canada Research Chair on sleep disorders and is past president of the Canadian Sleep Society and the study's author. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My first question to you is what is the impact of sleep disorders in Canada? How many people, do we know how many people report sleep difficulties, and what is the impact on the quality of life and upon society?
Well, insomnia is, first of all, is the most prevalent of all sleep disorders. There are many different types of sleep disorders, but by far insomnia is the most prevalent one. And it affects approximately 25 to 30% of the adult population, at least on an occasional basis. And if we are talking about chronic or persistent insomnia, then it's about 10%. So one person in 10 who has to struggle with sleep almost on a nightly basis.
And I would imagine if we're talking then, that's 3.5 million people in the country, the impact on quality of life, being able to do your work, and the impact upon society as well is probably tremendous.
Oh, absolutely. I think that we have a tendency to trivialize insomnia compared to other medical disorder, but clearly when you have trouble sleeping at night, it affects your daytime functioning. So you're more fatigued during the day, more sleepy. You have to struggle to accomplish otherwise simple tasks, so your memory and concentration are impaired. And not the least, your mood is also impaired. So people are more anxious, more depressed. And in the long run, we know that chronic insomnia increases the risk of major depression. So we shouldn't take it too lightly. And in terms of cost for society at large, insomnia is also associated with reduced productivity and increased absenteeism from work. So it has a major impact in several areas.
Now, what do we know about the common disruptors to the sleep cycle? And in part for our audience, what constitutes a normal sleep cycle?
Well, a normal sleep cycle, I guess we have to take the age factor into consideration. Certainly that a person who is 60 years of age, 60 years old, does not sleep as well as a 20 years old, even if that 60 years old is otherwise healthy. Mm-hmm. As we grow older, sleep becomes more fragile. So sleep is a little bit lighter. We wake up more easily already in the 40s and the 50s and certainly in the 60s and 70s. And sometimes we have more difficulties going back to sleep. So we have to distinguish these natural changes in sleep patterns with aging from clinical insomnia. Insomnia is a problem when a person has trouble sleeping several nights a week, and that persists for several weeks, months, or even years. And the main causes of insomnia, I mean, of course, it has to do with stress, anxiety, and lifestyle factors. And we need to distinguish also between the factors that precipitate insomnia in the first place from those that perpetuate insomnia over time. And this has very important implications for which treatment we will use, because insomnia is often triggered by stressful life events. For instance, someone's losing a job, or there's a death in the family, or a person is going through a separation. Naturally, these are major life events, and almost anyone will have trouble sleeping because of that. But once you habituate to these stressors, or the stressors goes away, then most people will resume a normal sleep pattern. But for other people, maybe those who are more at greater risk for insomnia to begin with, then there are other factors that will perpetuate insomnia over time. And that's where we're looking at behavioral factors, psychological factors, and we can talk about those, what they are, when we talk about treatment.
Sure. I wanted to ask, what was the basic science that led to the development of your study? What were some of the previous work, and you alluded to some of this already with regards to the cognitive therapy and some of the other treatments based on factors that contributed to the insomnia. But for the purpose of your study, what were you looking at in terms of already published information, the knowledge that we have today, and then applying it to your study design?
Well, there's already a fair amount of evidence showing that some classes of hypnotic medications work well in the short term, but we also know that they usually stop working as soon as you stop taking them. And sometimes, even if you continue taking them after a while, they lose their efficacy. As for cognitive behavioral therapy, we know that it works. It may take longer to produce benefits on sleep, but typically the benefits are longer lasting. But with either one of these treatment methods, it doesn't work for everyone. So there is no single therapy that works for all at this stage. And even when we say that a treatment is beneficial to improve sleep, it doesn't mean that it will make a poor sleeper a good sleeper at the end of therapy. So the idea here was to look at some type of combination or treatment sequences to maximize the benefits we could get from treatment. So I think that was the main reasoning behind the study design that we used in this particular research.
So in terms of your study population, who was included in the study, and what were your observations for these people?
Okay. So we recruited 160 people who met the diagnostic criteria for chronic insomnia. And previously, in other studies, we have focused, researchers in this area have focused on people who have primary insomnia. That means no other medical or psychiatric problems. But we know now that insomnia oftentimes come along with a comorbid or a coexisting condition, be it chronic pain, an anxiety disorder, maybe even depression, hypertension, and so on. So here we were particularly careful to enroll people with primary insomnia, but people with insomnia coexisting with other medical or psychological conditions. So we enrolled people who were 25 years of age or older, so the range here was 25 to 83 years old. The average age was 50, so it was middle-aged people, and these were people who had suffered from insomnia on average for more than 10 years. So even if the entry criteria was 6 months, we wanted people with chronic insomnia. Typically, when people volunteer for these studies, they've already had insomnia for many years, and they've already tried many other therapies before. So this is essentially the type of patients we recruited for this study.
And in terms of the randomization, what were the treatment arms?
Okay. So one of the unique features about this study was that we had a two-level treatment. So the first step was a treatment for 6 weeks, and during that period, we compared the two groups. One group received cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, alone, and the other group, we added a hypnotic medication that's commonly used for treating insomnia. So we had 80 people in each group, and the first question was, is it worth adding medication to what we can get from CBT alone? And that was the first research question. Mm-hmm. And we can answer it now, or
sure,
we can move to the... So basically, we found that if we add medication, we did obtain an added value in terms of outcome. So people who got the combined approach did improve more than those who received CBT alone. It was a modest added value, but I think it was still significantly important for people to sleep longer with the medication. So this is just the first part of the story, because this part of the treatment lasted 6 weeks. And we cannot expect that a treatment lasting 6 weeks will produce long-lasting results with people who have had insomnia on average for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the behavioral approach tend to produce longer lasting results, but as I said before, with medication, typically the benefits are short lasting. So the second phase of this study, after people completed 6 weeks of therapy, we re-randomized them once again to one of four conditions. So those who received the CBT alone initially were re-randomized to an extended phase of CBT. And this was going on for 6 months. They had monthly consultation visit with a psychologist. And unlike in the first 6 weeks, where they were seeing a psychologist in a group setup with five other people, mm-hmm. during the extended phase, treatment was more individualized. And the psychologist had more flexibility in terms of targeting specific residual factors that might contribute to persisting insomnia. So this was group one, and we compared that to another group that received no additional treatment. So the question here was, well, is it worth during extended therapy to add this treatment arm compared to what we got in terms of benefits from the first 6 weeks? And the response here was not as clear as we were expecting, in the sense that, yes, people who received an extended CBT treatment did better than those who did not get it. But the additional benefits were, I would say, once again, modest. I think that the main interest of this study was in the third and fourth group. And here we're referring to those who received initially the combined approach, those who received CBT plus medication. So after 6 weeks, we re-randomized those 80 people into two groups. The first group continued receiving CBT alone, and we discontinued the medication. And the other group, we continued them with both CBT and with medication, but instead of using medication every night, as in the first 6 weeks, we had them use a medication only on an as-needed basis. So we gave them 10 pills per month, and they were instructed to use only if needed. So here the interest was in looking at whether if indeed the addition of medication produced an added value after 6 weeks, what should we do after these 6 weeks? Should we discontinue the medication, or should we continue it but on an intermittent basis? And the response here was very clear that even if combined therapy produced better results after 6 weeks, in the long run, it's best to discontinue the medication mm-hmm. while you keep people in CBT. And when you do that, then you give people more time and a better opportunity to better integrate newly learned skills, because the CBT approach consists of teaching people skills about changing their behaviors, changing poor sleep habits, changing some unhelpful beliefs they may entertain about their sleep. So mm-hmm. I guess in a nutshell, that was the study and the main results.
And so where do you want to take this now? What would be the next step in your research?
Well, I think that when we do research, and particularly our group, we're very concerned about how are we going to translate these findings to clinical practice. Because, I mean, as I described it, it was a fairly complicated study design.
Right.
But I think the results are quite impressive, because in terms of treatment response, more than 80% of those who received the combined approach initially followed by CBT alone responded to therapy. And 60% did not have insomnia anymore at the end of therapy. So I think that's quite impressive. What we want to do now is to take this to clinical practice. So we hope that people who have insomnia and hear about these findings will not continue suffering in silence, that they will realize that help is available, and that instead of going to a drugstore to get an over-the-counter drugs like Sominex or Unisom or these type of antihistamines products, because we know these don't work.
Right.
they should probably talk to their doctor. And if they get the prescription, I think that may be okay for a short while, but if they get their prescription renewed month after month without having their sleep problem reevaluated, I think they should ask questions. And if they don't want to take medication, they should ask about what are the other options available. And CBT is clearly a very effective treatment option. The problem is that it's not always readily available. Some primary care physician can make some behavioral recommendations, but oftentimes a psychologist may be better equipped to provide this treatment, and more importantly, may have more time to conduct the needed follow-up, initially weekly and after a while monthly.
Dr. Charles Morin is professor of psychology and director of the Sleep Research Center at the Université de Laval, holds a Canada Research Chair on Sleep Disorders, and is past president of the Canadian Sleep Society, and study author of the study that appeared in the May 20th edition of the Journal of the American Medical Association. And Dr. Morin, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to review the study and also to point out the importance of CBT and how medications, although in combination with it, seem to provide, as you mentioned, a modest benefit. There still is that aspect of continued use of CBT as a means of helping people regain some of the sleep that they're having difficulty with. And I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.